Your Preparation Station with Donna Miller is on the air. Tune in for insight and encouragement for living a more sustainable, back-to-basics lifestyle. No matter where you've come from or what the future may hold, we hope each episode will encourage you with topics, guests, and stories that inspire your journey towards self-sufficiency. And now, the hostess of Your Preparation Station, Donna Miller.
Welcome once again to another episode of Your Preparation Station. I'm Donna Miller, and I am in my fourth year of doing this show. I love doing the show. It's one of my favorites because we have such broad topics. And I've had such a great group of listeners, and I want to thank you for tuning in again. Now that we have changed the format, changed the announcer, changed all kinds of stuff, I hope you're having a good time. I know that I'm enjoying doing the show. So if you've got questions or comments or a topic or a guest even, please contact me at yourpreparationstation@gmail.com, and we'll look into seeing if it's somebody that we can get on the show. Questions and comments are always welcome. It kind of helps spur on making a better show for you, so please feel free to send me your thoughts and questions as well. Well, I'm really excited today because I have a wonderful author, and I've had a chance to be able to visit with him. I always want to record the pre-show conversation. We had such a good one. We'll have to have him come back on again so that we can do this. I've enjoyed getting to know him. His name is Charlie Hogwood, and he's the author of The Survival Group Handbook. Why am I bringing this book specifically to Your Preparation Station? Well, because you guys have heard my spiel, and I'm going to do it again. And I think this really goes along with something I've been saying for 4 years. When I was watching some things going on, my husband and I seeing some trends in the preparedness industry. I hate to call it an industry, but yes, unfortunately, it has become one. But some trends in the lifestyle and some things that are preying upon people that kind of irk me and make me kind of get angry. So I'm about to hit that soapbox. If you've listened to me for 4 years, you pretty much know what I'm going to say, and I hope it's ingrained in you. So, you know, I don't even have to say it anymore. You already do it out of habit. But if you don't know me, please stay tuned. I'll make it short and sweet. I want to ask you to please do a little recon, not just on me and who we are, but on anybody you allow to speak into your life. Anyone who you think has advice for your preparedness journey, I think it behooves you not to just blindly search the internet and go, oh, hey, this person's got a great big following. They must know everything. You know you can buy those followers, right? You know they can be sitting in a high rise anywhere and not prep a day in their life and look like they're doing it, right? On the internet, as my children say, we can be anybody on the internet. You can be famous. Please do a little due diligence. No, do a lot of due diligence and find out who it is you're listening to. That's one of the reasons I enjoy bringing on specific authors, because they've taken the time to put this out here for you. And they're pretty, especially like Charlie, he's pretty vulnerable to say, this is my life. This is what I'm living. I'm interacting with people. He's not some unknown person that just, you know, ghost wrote a book and is hiding out somewhere. I don't know, not really living a preparedness lifestyle. He's kind of right there in front of you. So I'm really excited to have him on here because he typifies what I keep telling you guys to do. Find out who it is you're listening to, and that's someone you can take advice from. But there are three things you can shy away from, one of which is if you can't find them, they never respond to you by email. You just cannot get a real-life person to give you a response. Then they're probably a nice marketing machine for preppers, because that is a big niche industry now. I would back away from that person or that website. If they push your panic buttons to make you purchase something, or if they push your panic buttons just habitually to scare you into action, those they kind of go hand in hand, I would also say back away from that person. And then last but not least, if they try to tell you that you have to do it exactly like them, they're not a facilitator but a dictator, that's another person I think you should shy away from, simply because they don't live where you live, they don't have the surroundings you have, they don't have the family dynamics, the health concerns, the budget, you name it, they're not you. Unless they're willing to facilitate you instead of dictate to you what you should do. Another person I would say, you might learn some things from them, but be very careful how you absorb that information. Now, a way that you can find out who we are, you know, you're supposed to do some recon, you can go to three different places, one of which is millersgrainhouse.com, and that is a business that came out of our lifestyle. Go over there and check out things. That is actually what pays the bills. Then secondly, you can, of course, go to the website that's named after this show, which is yourpreparationstation.com. You can watch our sometimes awkward journey of restoring an old homestead that's been in my husband's family for 200 years. It's rather interesting watching that thing and get up to snuff. And then last but not least, we would like for you to go pick up a free digital issue of Prepare Magazine. This is something that we give out. It's for your benefit. So it will show you the heart behind what we do, because there is a free version that's always available, because we want as many people prepared as possible in peace and in fun and faith, not in fear. So go pick up one of those at preparemag.com. Just select the free digital version and you'll have one come to your inbox every month. So that's how you can find out who this disembodied voice is. But I do want to introduce you to our guest, and I will give you a little bit of background on him, and then we'll bring him on.
National Geographic traveled all the way to Boone, North Carolina, to select Turtle Island Preserve, a nonprofit outdoor discovery center and Appalachian Heritage Farm, as one of the 100 most enriching destinations in North America. For over 26 years, families have gained enrichment while discovering nature, and more importantly, themselves. In a world where digital screens and push buttons have replaced actual contact with nature, Turtle Island's beautiful campus and knowledgeable staff reconnect its guests to their natural roots. While camping out, visitors learn vast amounts in our non-electric, wood-fired community. Hundreds of hands-on classes are offered, such as beekeeping, woodworking, primitive skills, and more, covering the gamut of early traditional living. A program for fathers and sons kicks off the summer season, followed by a 5-day workshop for adults with renowned naturalist and director Eustace Conway. Turtle Island is a great destination for scouts, school field trips, homeschool, and special interest groups. Please visit our website and then visit our paradise, turtleislandpreserve.org, or call 828-265-2267.
2 days that can save your life. The Preppers and Patriots Expo, August 16th and 17th at the Doubletree Hotel in Springfield, Missouri. Learn about long-term storage food, water filtration, solar power, firearms for survival, wilderness survival, and ways to protect you and your family during an emergency. Vendor tables still available. The phone number to call, 417-264-2435. 417-264-2435. PreppersandPatriots.net.
You're not buying food storage containers, heirloom seeds, or water purifiers just for the fun of it. You're getting these things ready for your peace of mind. Visit the Always Ready store in Burnsville, North Carolina, where peace of mind is the end goal of preparedness. Find everything you need to get ready, from food dehydrators to whole grain wheat. Doesn't matter if you're a veteran or a novice to preparedness, the Always Ready store is there to help. Visit the store at West Main Street in Burnsville, North Carolina, located right next to Wishbone's Restaurant. Or visit www.alwaysreadystore.com to shop securely online for anything you might need to keep you and your family prepared. Always Ready Store. Are you ready?
Your preparation station is on the air.
So before we get into the interview, let me introduce the guest that I have here with me today. You may or may not be aware already and have picked up his book. So if you haven't, please check the show links below. You can connect there and get a good look at the book. But if you do know, then you're kind of going to get an insight into, I guess, the mind of the author a little bit on how things were going when he was writing the book and how you can use it. I'd like to introduce you to Charlie Hogwood. Charlie is the Chief Instructor Executive Director for PREP, P-R-E-P, and he's responsible for designing and teaching over 40 different courses in the Emergency Preparedness, Disaster Readiness, and Urban Wilderness Survival. Charlie is also the author of Survival Group Handbook. Now, we're going to get into a few discussions about, you may have heard this before in a different name. It is the foremost guide to planning, organizing, and leading people in a survival situation. His book has been utilized by small groups and large groups alike, and has also been used as a team-building resource for corporations and civilian organizations. Charlie Hogwood lives in Florida, and he served for 15 plus years in the U.S. Army and the Florida National Guard. He holds multiple leadership and survival certifications. If you've not picked up a copy of this book before, it is called The Survival Group Handbook. And again, the show notes are linking below where you can go pick up a copy. If you're listening through iTunes, you can go on Amazon, I'm sure, and pick it up, and you can check it out there. I want to make sure that we have a good connection here. Can you hear me, Charlie?
I'm here, Donna.
Good, great. You sound great. We have a good connection. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I would like to introduce the listeners to you a little bit more. So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I think you covered a lot of it. Well, we're located down here in South Florida, and we have a school called Personal Readiness Education Programs, where we do, like you said, over 40 different courses in survival preparedness. And we've been focusing lately on consulting with groups and understanding the group dynamics of survival. So that's where I put a lot of my efforts. I'm also working in getting my emergency management degree because I want to really better be able to explain the interface between families, local, and governments at all level in disaster, which is an angle that doesn't normally get addressed. A lot of people are, they're worried about all kinds of things, but I like to get it to the likely hazards and what to expect. As far as about me, I'm, of course, very outdoorsy. I love reading. I'm a voracious reader. I love to study. I stay on top of the news as much as possible. And I'm down here with Courtney, my daughter, and my big dog, Rufus, who has been out terrorizing our new chickens, which I hear you've got some new ones, too.
Yeah, and it's our cat who does the terrorizing here. So it's just a terror. I'm really glad you've come on the show today, because this may be a new concept. What actually is a survival group?
Well, I tell you what, a survival group is really... It could be your just a couple of friends. It could be a family. It could be a group of families. And it could be a larger group. We have some national-sized groups, too, that are into it for constitutional reasons. But essentially, they're survival groups, too. In a nutshell, a survival group is just a number of people who have pledged to be there for each other in case times get tough. It doesn't have to be a major apocalyptic scenario like so many people, think about. It could just be, a weather event, a flood, a house fire, wildfires, hurricanes, like we're looking at a tropical depression right now off our coast. So we pledge to be there for each other because many hands make light work, is the saying.
That's actually very true. We have a group, after reading through your book or portions of it, I have not made it all the way through. Going to be really honest with everybody, which most people know me. They know I'm going to be brutally honest sometimes. So I've made it through the portions that actually feel like they apply right now for what we've got. We have a group in our area in Asheville that, when it comes to total numbers, we're over 360 people. When it comes to real people that we interact with, we're closer to about 50. They are the ones who are really, really active. So defining what our group is your book's been very helpful in seeing some gaps that we've got. So I hope other people will pick it up and check it out, because it's a concept for a while that people in the preparedness or survival aspect kind of didn't talk about. It was very lone wolf for a long time. So I'm glad that you've got that. Tell us a little bit about your book, The Survival Group Handbook.
Well, the book was really generated because we had so many people coming through our classes, coming to our meetups or mingling events and saying, look, I want to meet other people in my area, and how do I do it? And here are some of the problems that maybe our existing group already has, and that's why we put it together as a book. It really offered people a direction. We laid out scenarios, we laid out problems, we laid out how to determine what it is you're looking for, and carry that all the way through into a successful group, and then kind of the troubleshooting part of it, because a lot of people just didn't know how to do it. And ultimately, we were just trying to figure out how to build a survival relationship. And frankly, without going too far into the larger groups, a lot of people are just saying, I'm into survival, but my spouse is not, or they just don't want to hear about it, or they're against it totally, or they have this normalcy bias or the risk homeostasis problem. We all know that. So this was one of those things where I'd say, first of all, go get them the book 1 second after and ask them to read it. Then after that, then take this book, the Survival Group Handbook, and say, okay, now, here's how we can offset that emotion you're feeling right about now. And So that's how we got to where we are today. We never intended to set out to write a book. We were asked to write the book. And what we did was we put it together in such a way that it really started with an introspective. And that was pretty tough. That was a big discovery period for us.
Mm-hmm. Did you have trial and error periods when you were forming groups of your own? I mean, was there something monumental that kind of prompted you to put certain things in the book?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. And as we started researching active groups throughout the country, privately and publicly in many cases, a lot of groups that didn't want their names out there, but they were gracious enough to share some of their problems. And we found that there were some of the similar problems that we had experienced in our own groups. And when a lot of it had to do with apathy, it had to do with attitude, it had to do with, you know, what their expectations were. But I would say that, you know, the challenging for leadership, you know, in the group and something that we actually found a problem that I've never heard anybody else bring up. And we coined the term the independence conflict. And that was really when you've got people that are already self-reliant, who do not want to depend on the system or anybody else, but they know that there's a value, a benefit to joining a group. So they have this inner conflict that says, I want to join somebody else, but do I really want to give up my personal sovereignty for them to make decisions for me? Mm-hmm. And that was really when we started realizing we'd hit something big, and we started deconstructing that and figuring out why and how to fix it.
That's actually something I had not actually thought about. When you talk about groups, my brain goes to our group of people. I know them personally. Our criteria is this is not an online group. You're going to have to show up to meetings. You know, we have certain criteria. And it's a pretty laid-back, good group of folks that in times of trouble have already risen to the occasion in individual people's lives. But I had not thought about that under duress, under extreme stressful situations. We're all kind of used to being very independent.
We're all independent, but we realize that there is a benefit to going it with someone else for all the reasons that we talked about. You know, as far as time and money saving, but experience diversification. And we ran into a lot of the same problems that any group has. There's a certain social stratification. There's that diversity of experiences. And it's kind of funny because, as you said earlier, we had a lot of small businesses come back and say, I got this book and I bought it for all my employees, all my sales team. I bought it, for our office staff. And we actually use a lot of the information to go through for our business. I was surprised, and I didn't expect that people were able to carry what we discovered back into any team, because it's really mm-hmm. about relationships and team dynamics.
That's true. That's actually true. When you think about it, it's not about just being in a survival situation. It's about a lot of other everyday progressing a group forward and having a common goal. And, of course, in a survival group, it is to survive and recoup, whereas it may be a different goal given any number of things depending upon the circumstances. So that's a pretty good idea. Do you, and forgive my ignorance because it just may be that I haven't made it to that chapter yet, do you suggest for people to come up with a set of goals for their survival group?
Absolutely. You'll find that we have a very clear goal establishing process in the book. And like I said before, the book is laid out that you could start at page one. And if you follow it through and apply a lot of the concepts, the system, whatever you want to call it, to your group meetings or your relationships or just to your family, one of the very early on things is to decide, what am I looking for here? What do I want out of myself? What do I want out of my group? If I run into somebody else that is in my group, do I understand what it is they are looking for? Because it doesn't do you any good to really build a group if you're going to go two separate ways as soon as something goes wrong. So you have to establish those goals, and we give you we use the SMART method, specific, measurable, when you set up your goals. That's all written down in the book, and it takes a lot of the thinking out. One of the things when it comes to goal setting or decision making or anything, when you get into a situation under duress or you get into a situation that you're extremely stressed or unfamiliar with, it's natural to form a bit of a tunnel vision. So what we did is we understand that we've got to put people into that mentality today as much as possible. It's going to be very hard to do, but you got to say, I'm not sitting in an air-conditioned room tomorrow. Today we're sitting in a nice cool room where, we have the benefit of electricity and food. Tomorrow we may not. So our thought process and achieving our goals are going to be more complicated. So we figured that if we wrote it down in very plain English, you could open up the book as a reference material and say, what are we doing here? What do I want? What were our goals? We wrote it all down, so let's see what it is. And now we can better follow through with it later on, because once you write some things down, and we're just, believe me, this is not a homework project. You're not going to write a lot of stuff down. But when you do document your goals, that becomes essentially a time machine. It's an anchor document that says, this is why we're here. So later on, if things get all confusing and there's some dysfunction or some really stressful situations, we can look back at it and say, wait a minute, we've got a little off track. Now let's get back on track. And that's why it's so beneficial to establish, you know, those goals as simple or as big as you want them to be.
Yeah, that makes sense. You make like a roadmap so that everyone knows what the course is that's being steered.
And you reduce the expectations of people, not reduce maybe, but you clarify expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you expect to happen in the future and what one of your group members or family members think is going to happen in the future might be two separate paths. So if you get people together and you say, look, this is why we're doing this, then you've got people buying into the idea and you can work together as a team rather than just chafing the entire way.
That's true, because even in any type of relationship with two different people, the thoughts and communications can actually conjure up different expectations. And so if you don't get those clear, like in our situation, my thoughts are just make it through very basic but happy. And someone else might be, we got to get everything established back like it used to be, you know, in a survival situation. And I'm perfectly fine to say, no, I don't care. I just want, you know, give me some land and some food and a tent, you know.
Sure. I mean,
they want the condo back, you know.
Your goal could be as simple as, you know, let's just try to stay above room temperature today. And it could be, let's reestablish society in our area, you know. So,
yeah.
But whatever your goal is, there are certain things that you're going to be able to identify that you're going to need to do to make that happen. You know, whether it's just make sure you still got air, food, and water, and some kind of climate control, those are your basic needs of people until you get into the psychological sections of it. And we do address a lot of the psychological stuff in the book, because a lot of people say, well, there's all kinds of problems, but I need somebody just to tell me the solutions. Well, we try to identify those problems, we put them in the book, so you can use the solutions.
You talked about the psychological, which actually kind of hits a thing with me, because that's something that seems very overlooked in our industry. A lot of people are buy this, store that, learn this. The psychological, the mental acuity, the emotional attachment to certain things, they all kind of meld in together. So your book goes into addressing a good bit of that in the group dynamic.
It does. If you want to remember one theme throughout this entire, you know, situation, your experience with a group, is that it is forming and maintaining relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And we call, one of the things we also call the survival marriage. People have a tendency to just try so hard to find others that have a very similar way of thinking. I could say like-minded, and it is that to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But they jump into bed, proverbially, too soon. And then they don't realize, well, wait, we should address this as if we were dating someone with the intention to get married. And
mm-hmm.
so we've got to, I mean, because in this case, a survival marriage, if you get a divorce during a survival situation, you know, the spurned lover and his or her friends might just take all of your stuff.
Yeah.
That would be a bad situation, you know, when things are already tough. So take your time and build that relationship. And you got to understand that not every personality is going to be the same. There's a couple of concurrent streams going on at the same time. One, you're all moving in the same direction towards survival, but you're moving from a diversity of experiences and personalities and mental situations. And there's, you toss in that there's going to be a lot of psychological trauma if it's a really bad disaster. And that's going to make things really tough when it comes to working with other people. So you've got to not just expect that everybody is going to be, you know, on the right track at the same time and motivated. You're going to run into a lot of troubles. And then you start throwing in families and friends and people that just show up because a member said, I just couldn't leave them behind. Now I got somebody I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we started putting all this stuff together into some sort of a path that you could follow and say, look, here's how you address people that you don't know. This is how you, you know, vet people for membership. This is how you, you know, understand the psychological situation that they're dealing with. And we wrote it all down so that you could refer back to it, because mm-hmm. the psychology part of it is unknown today. Remember that? Remember when Donald Rumsfeld said there's the known unknowns and all that?
Mm-hmm.
And there's unknown unknowns. Well, yeah, that's what you're going to be dealing with later on.
That's true, because you really cannot get, my husband calls it taking the temperature. You can't really get the real temperature of someone that you've just met, you know, and then you put in 10 different people and the temperature of the whole group dynamics changes, because everyone has just a slightly different psychological or historical attachment to certain things, and so they react differently. So that is something good to kind of put in the forethought before you start forming a group or as you're forming a group.
Yeah, you could think about that. And mm-hmm. but to truly, you know, test the temperature, if you will, we could sit in a meeting and say, okay, once a month we're going to have a meeting, and we're going to sit in a room and we're going to eat some brownies and we're going to talk about, you know, what's going on in the world today. That's one thing. But remember, you're building a group to work under very austere, very adverse conditions. So you need to take your group out and say, let's go plant a garden. Let's see what mm-hmm. people are like when you take them out of their comfort zone. Give them a shovel. Give them an axe. You know, take them to the range and watch how frustrated they get because they can't seem to zero, you know, a rifle, or, you know, their plants are dying. I mean, when you take people out of the comfort zone, then and only then will you start to see how their personality really, you know, what it is. And one of the things that we referred back to was, remember back in the days when you get pulled over by, you know, by the police, you know, for driving, they'd make you sit in the car for about 20 minutes while they, you know, slowly wrote you a ticket, because they want to see, anybody can behave for a short period of time, but after a while, your true personality starts to come out. And it may show, you might not be a bad person, but you may be very moody. You may, you know, you may get frustrated very easily. So take them out of the comfort zone and make them wait a little bit and make them do other things. You'll start to see what personalities are. Then you can get a true, better temperature reading for that person.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. Well, and then do you feel that there are, what would you say are the top two important things or first factors that someone, if they're thinking, I need to form a group, what should they think of first?
Absolutely. First and foremost, you have got to sit and you've got to answer some questions. You've got to do some introspective on yourself. You got to say, what am I thinking here? Why do I want somebody else to work with me? And you've kind of got to verbalize it. Don't just think about it. Write it down, say it out loud, talk it over with the family, call a family meeting if you want. But you've got to say, this is why I think we need to do this, and this is what we expect to happen. But try to keep your expectations realistic. Yes, I mean, it's always fun to talk about zombies and, you know, asteroids, but let's start talking about flooding, hurricanes, tornadoes, and earthquakes. I mean, there are mm-hmm. things that are far more likely to happen that will disrupt your life. So if you're prepared for those, then you'll be more prepared for zombies, which are always fun to talk about. So right. I would say the very first thing to do is understand what it is you're looking for and make sure you can communicate that by way of an elevator pitch. For those that don't know what an elevator pitch is, you own a company. Let's say you own a company. You hopped into an elevator, and somebody there is a person that could really give you an opportunity. You have to, before that man gets off or that person gets off the elevator, communicate who you are, what you're doing, what your goals are, and why he or she would be a benefit, or you'd be a benefit to them. So you get about 30 seconds to communicate your point. And if you can do that, that'd be first and foremost. And then be very careful who you let into your business. Remember the survival marriage. So vet everybody that you let in as carefully as possible without sounding kind of crazy and extremist. Hey, don't put a hood on them and then you know, run a background check on them while they're in the basement going under the third degree. But build a relationship carefully. If you know, the story is, if you know five secrets, never share more than three or four of them, because you're of no value to anybody anymore. Always mm-hmm. keep yourself valuable and be careful who you tell people things to. So I say those are the two most important things right away.
I think those are great ones. Those are great foundational ones for forming any group. Are there any warning signs that you need to look out for? I'm going to ask you from the perspective of forming the group, because I think the onus falls on the leadership to decide what goes on with the people who want to join. But are there warning signs that people might want to look for when they start to form a group?
Yes, there's a couple of them. There's a group of people called the three-monthers. And the three-monthers are somebody who is, it seems to be the perfect person to join the group. You feel blessed that you found them. They're motivated, they're skilled, they're ready to go, they have stuff, and you're like, wow, I can't believe we got lucky enough to find this person. But then they become burned out after a while. So if you have somebody that's way hard charging, it may either overpower things that's going on around them, or they may burn out and you end up getting rid of them later on. And then once you start getting rid of people, well, then you have another set of security problems to deal with. But rule of thumb, always get rid of people early. It's because it's easier to get rid of them early than it is later on. So just be careful. When I say get rid of, maybe stop communicating with them, or just say, look, maybe we're just not a right fit right now. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever you need to say. But look for personality flaws. Look for somebody that has an extremely short temper. Don't be so quick to just write off someone's quirks because you think that you'd rather put up with some quirks, because later on, once you're all moving in a direction for a real survival situation, everything's going to fall into place. Everything will not fall into place later on. You can't take a stressful situation in a comfortable place, and then later on when you've got a stressful situation and have, say, you know what, now your quirks are really bothering me. And then, you know, that's a problem. And we all know what quirks mean, or personalities, or extremely dominant personalities. That usually has something to do with people's ability to communicate and listen. So you want to find somebody who can communicate, who can listen, who's willing to be open to ideas, and not overpower every situation. We don't want our survival group to turn into a PTA meeting where, you know, parents are having a fit because they won't support it because it wasn't my idea. You know, we've all seen it. That's not my idea. Sorry, I can't support it. I don't care how good an idea it is. So look for those kind of personality warnings.
Okay. Those are really good for anyone who's listening, who's considering forming a group. These are some great tips, both on the pro and the con of, you know, look out for and what to look to start with. Here's a question, though, and this is because I know a lot of my listeners, I get the opportunity to converse through Facebook or email, or sometimes we just get on the phone, live in a more remote area, and the actual ability to gather with other people is a little bit difficult. What kind of suggestions do you have for those people?
Well, it's a double-edged sword when you live in a remote area, and here's what we've found. The people that live in a remote area are more self-reliant, so they've got a better attitude towards doing that. Now, they also may be a little bit more independent and not as willing to work together because, well, they feel that they're okay. So you may have to readjust what it is you're looking for in a group. They may not all collect at one location, but it'd be like one ranch helping another ranch, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the cowboy westerns where the ranchers, they got together when they needed to. They got out, they found the lost cattle, they chased off the rufflers and stuff like that. That was essentially their survival group. But sometimes we look at a survival group as a bunch of people that are, you know, loaded into a house or into a bunker somewhere and waiting for something to go wrong. And then you got people in a close situation. So remote, rural type people are very good, but you may also find that they don't think about things the same way you do. You may say, hey, I see a collapse of the dollar come on the horizon, and they may say, well, you know, times are just tough right now. But they probably have skills. They have, you know, skills in raising animals and gardening. They may have crafting skills and all those things. So if that's the kind of – this is why it's so important to learn the people that you're dealing with. Make friends with those neighbors, or at least become acquaintances. Maybe you can help them. They can help you. And next thing you know, if something really does go wrong, now you've built a trusting relationship. And then you'll be able to come together better. They may not be interested in going to the range all the time. They might not be interested in learning how to purify water and all that. But that's why people have different skills. So if you can make up for what they don't have and they can make up for what you don't have, you've pretty much got a group as long as you've got a trusting relationship.
That's a very good point. I think one thing that we're very blessed with in our group, although I'd love to see more real active people showing up, but we have a wide selection from urban, small, tiny homes. That's my favorite. People live in tiny homes and live in very urban areas, as well as the farmer. We have people that come to our meetings that are just pretty vast in their array of experiences. And so you mentioned how people look at things differently in a given situation. If they happen to be in town and an emergency happened, our farmer may be kind of a duck out of water and not quite know how to handle something because they're not used to the urban area.
That's true. If he's in a very urban area, let's say, what could a scenario be that happens downtown? Maybe there's a train derailment, you know, or maybe, you know, there's some, you turn around a corner, you roll into some civil unrest, and all of a sudden now you're in the middle of, you know, an urban survival situation. And the rancher may not be ready for that kind of thing.
Right.
But those are good meeting topics. If you get together in a meeting, say, listen, we feel that there's a potential for some urban unrest in our nearby city. So if you're going into town, maybe, you know, here's some ideas, some things to look for and some things to maybe take along with you, you know, keep your car kit up to date, you know. So there's so many meeting topics. If you ever have a group meeting and you're just like, I'm running out of things to talk about, you're missing the boat completely. There's so much to talk about, and it does not need to be crazy. Civil
right.
unrest is a very, well, it's becoming more common worldwide. We know that. So have
yeah.
a topic about it and educate those people, cross-train them by others that already have some ideas on how to do that.
Well, we're going to take a real quick break here, and then we'll come back and finish up the rest of the show for your preparation station. Stay tuned for a word from our sponsors.
Do you have your free digital subscription to Prepare Magazine yet? If not, then hurry over to preparemag.com and start getting each monthly issue sent directly to your inbox. It's easy. All you have to do is go to preparemag.com, enter your name and email address, and you're subscribed. Consider signing up for the premium membership for past issues and exclusive resources. You can even subscribe to the beautiful print version of Prepare Magazine. Visit preparemag.com and choose the option that's most valuable to you. Prepare Magazine, encouraging, empowering, and enriching your journey.
Hey, shh, I have a secret. Actually, I'm just checking to see if you're listening. There's a special code embedded in each episode of your preparation station that you can save at millersgrainhouse.com/store. If you go to millersgrainhouse.com/store and put in the code YPS, you can save 5% on any and every order from now on. We just want to be able to say thank you for listening and help you prepare. Shh, remember the secret code, YPS.
Your preparation station is on the air.
Thank you so much for staying tuned to the second half of your preparation station. We've had a chance to talk with Charlie Hogwood about many different things the first half, so if you've missed it, you need to go back and listen. Start over. Pick up a lot of the things for the foundation and why he wrote the book and some things about forming your own survival group that are very important. So I'd make sure you don't miss those from the first half of the show. So Charlie, how long has the book been out now?
The first version of the book came out, I think last October, and was doing really well, but we ended up rebranding it, and the new version of the book just came out last month, and here we are.
So. Awesome. If someone is not familiar with the book, they may have already heard it under its previous name. It was previously called MAGS, wasn't it?
Yes, MAGS, which stands for Mutual Assistance Groups and the People Part of Prepping. A lot of people, as we traveled around the country and we were doing some speaking engagements at some of the larger expos, people would look at the book and they didn't know what to think of that. The acronym was a little too, I should have followed the rule of the NAZ, which is the no acronym zone. So people didn't know if it was a fiction book or what it was about. So we said, you know what, let's just come back out and call it what it is. It's the Survival Group Handbook. Mm-hmm. And we cleaned up some editing that it was just, it was painting me. And mm-hmm. we put a new cover to it. And made it into what it is today. So now we feel that it really starts to hit more clearly as to what the book is for. It's not a fiction book. It's actually a textbook, reference book, educational material to help you guide your way through forming a group in a survival situation.
Yeah, you have appendixes that help to explain, you know, like a quick reference guide for things, as well as place where you can take notes. So it's somewhat of a textbook, but not really homeworky type textbook. It's more of a nice diagram situation.
Right. It's not one of those that every chapter you're just going to be a quiz and you got to, you know, write something down. Because, I mean, while that may be an effective way to learn stuff, that this book was made to read ahead of time, Or if you were in the middle of a disaster, you could yank it off the shelf and say, where do I go? What characteristics do I look for in the physical location? What do I look for to vet people on the run? You know, am I in a collapsing building? Hopefully I already read this earlier, but if I'm in a situation that's a downturn in the economy, I can pick this up and say, you know what? I really need to focus on some of these certain areas, and it gives you an exact way to do it. It tells you what problems you are likely to run into based on our research with all the other active groups that we've come across. And it also tells you, well, now I've identified the problem. Yep, that's me. Here's a couple of solutions for it. So I can go down the list and say, wow, I know how to handle this situation. I knew it was coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's one thing that I have liked about the book is some of the quick references and some of the breakdowns as you read through the chapters that kind of maybe you hadn't thought of before before you pick up reading it, and now you kind of get that, and it's ingrained in there as a normal process now to think through this way versus in a reaction situation, you're really not thinking of some of this stuff.
That's actually one of the most common things we hear is somebody says, I was reading that book and I kept finding myself shaking my head. I've seen this before. I know this. Now but great. I'm glad there's an answer for it.
Yeah, it commits it to a little bit more. Well, we always, when the kids are doing something, my kids are grown. I don't know why I call them kids still, but when they're doing something, they will always say, you know, we think through things in such a different process than most of our peers do. And a lot of that comes from us living a preparedness lifestyle the whole time they were growing up because we looked at things differently. And so you may actually look at things differently, but until you realize I need to look at them differently before that emergency hits. And this covers an awful lot more of a wide gamut than maybe your own life would.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I can directly relate to what you're saying when it comes to the kids. I mean, I've got a young daughter who if I said, let's go camping, she's going to roll her eyes like every other teenager is. But when I do take her camping, she's like, can I make the fire? I'm like, absolutely. How do you want to do it? You want the lighter? She's like, nope, I'm going to go get a ferrocerium rod and I'm going to start it up. So you realize all those years of stealth training, which I keep beating on, is you just kind of show them something and let them, you know, start to inculcate these things into what, you know, it shows up. And here she is. Now she's making the fire. She's showing the other kids how to put a tent up. She went to a camp out the other day. She was the only kid who knew how to put up and take down a tent. So she ended up staying longer than she should have because she's like, I had to help all these other people. They had no idea. And I'm proud to say that my little girl can do these things. And that it's a critical thinking thing. It's a self-reliant thing. It's a self-confidence thing. So this way of thinking is a good thing.
It is. It definitely is. I think my kids can say, you know, I've got friends who have never thought of some of this before. And you absolutely hit the nail on the head. It is a critical thinking thing in addition to a self-reliance thing. Even if your children, I'm going to just say this because I have grown kids that I watch them go through a lot of the phases. Even if your kids, like you even said, I don't want to do that. They roll their eyes at something that's going on. You mentioned the stealth training. The fact is you can rest assured as they get older, even if they don't choose to live that way currently, they have the building blocks to be able to do it in a pinch if they have to.
It's in there.
That's a good feeling. Yeah. I mean, my kids will say all the time, you know, even if I don't live this way right now, I know I can do it if I need to. They can garden, they can raise animals, they can do it even if for right now they're living in an apartment downtown.
Yeah, it teaches them the frugal skills. They know how to shop by the ounce. They understand package sizing. They understand, you know, food dating. And, well, I need to reach the back of the shelf to get the fresher food. You know, it's not just the wilderness side of it. It's just the daily, you know, growing up. These are experiences that they need somebody's got to teach them. Not going to get it in school for the most part.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true. Well, they understand being marketed to. And there's real quick aversion. They quickly click their brains cut off and go, hi, no, I'm not paying attention to that person. I'm being sold. Instead of genuinely, I have a need that needs to be met. I'm being sold something. So they have that as well. It's a kind of a psychological thing, I think, from being raised the way we taught them to be very, I don't want to say cynical, but it's aware.
Aware. Situational awareness. And that's so hard to teach when you've got so many digital interruptions in our lives. We're all smartphones and everything that's going on. The media is just, it's very targeted, and you don't even realize. I mean, we as adults might realize it more, but kids have no idea they're being targeted in every way.
Yeah. I unfortunately don't think too many of them do have that realization. We kind of went down a bunny trail. I apologize. Because I get very passionate about how our lifestyles affect our children. And you alluded to it earlier in the show about, you have sometimes people coming saying, well, my spouse isn't on board, or my kids think I'm nuts, or, whatever. And that's a relationship that you're bound to. It's not like you chose those people. They're not your neighbors and, hey, let's hang out and do stuff together. You're bound to them in your family unit. It'd be nice if everybody was on the same page, but they may or may not be. So just, I think we need to cut them some slack, give them some grace to get there.
You hit on actually a very important point that nobody ever hits on. And there's a difference between people that want to be there and people that get drawn in and have to be there for the most part. Mm-hmm. When we form a group, a lot of times adults, they understand why we're here, and they do make efforts to work together. But the families that come along that get drawn into the tailwinds of all this, they don't understand. Like we talked about earlier, the spouse is like, well, I don't want to worry about that. I don't want to do that. I think that's silly. So those, it takes a different, I want to say a management style, a leadership style, to communicate to that different person, say, this is why we're doing this, and this is the reason, the cost-benefit analysis, if you will. And so that you've got to, when you lead people in a survival group, you've got to understand those personalities, like we talked about earlier, why they are there. And if they want to be there, they're going to be more open to ideas. If they don't want to be there, you're going to find a lot of trouble. And if you force those children, or if you force that spouse to do it, or you sound, too extreme in your views, you're going to drive those people away, and it can really ruin a relationship. And the last thing you want is for you to be part of a group and bring along family who thinks you're nuts, because that's going to cause a lot of trouble with the other families in the group.
Mm-hmm. So, very much so. Very much so. And it sometimes seems like that's where some of the biggest conflict is for people when I talk to them. It's within their own family unit, either their immediate spouse and children or extended in-laws or parents. And you're completely right. There is a different way to approach it with those people versus the person that sees eye to eye with you and they're also on the same journey. You risk ostracizing them. And then what's the worst part about that is that they could end up being not prepared in a disaster. It's not that what it does to you so much as what you end up seeing them not ready.
Absolutely. And we do run across that. Unfortunately, family is... that's like letting friends or family work for you if you own a business. I mean, what a mess that becomes, because you make certain concessions to them at the detriment of the mission or the business. So the best thing you could do is, like we always do anyway, trying to find a way to bring the family along and get them moving in the right direction through some sort of stealth, compassion, understanding why they're there. You just got to work with them and build that family relationship. And frankly, this whole survival group thing or individual family survival thing, that's what it's all about. We're developing mm-hmm. and we're building and maintaining relationships and trying to make our lives a little bit more stable and reduce, we're mitigating the effects of disruptions, whether it's a flat tire on the highway, we've taught our family how to change a tire. If there's an earthquake like the Pacific Northwest just came up today, said, hey, we're looking for an 8.0 to show up pretty soon. Mm-hmm. That's a clue. You might want to start getting ready for that. So whatever the disaster is, we want to be able to mitigate that disruption on our life, whether it's big or small.
Yeah, exactly. You alluded to something earlier in the independent mindset of most people who live this lifestyle, the more self-sufficient tend to have that inner battle between I need to yoke with other people and have a support group, but I want to be fiercely independent as well, which always tends to bring up the idea that I always hear. OPSEC, operational security. Don't let anybody see your prep. Tell anybody know what you got. That whole secrecy mentality. Do you address that in the book? Because that's a really big topic for some people.
We do address it. You'd be surprised, frankly, in real life when I sit with people and tell them, look, you've got to mind your OPSEC, your operational security. They say, that's ridiculous. If I'm in a survival situation, I want everybody and anybody to show up to work with me and help me. Well, would you open your door to your pantry today to somebody walking down the street? Would you just stand out in public and start handing out business cards with your bank account numbers on it? I mean, honestly, let's think about this for a second. Unfortunately, there are people that you do not want in your business. And one of the things when I do in my live course for this, when I go to a lot of the speaking events, I'll say, who has somebody in their life that they do not want to show up to the apocalypse with them? Okay. We've all got that person in, at where we work or, you know, in our group or something. It's just like, okay, I've really had about enough of this person. Those, they're going to show up. Those are the people that you're talking about. So your operational security really, though it is a military term, it's just a good way to say, I've got some private things. I've got some secrets. I don't want everybody to know how much food I got. Because there is this thing called the stray cat syndrome, that what we wrote about. I said, I don't know what else to call it, so I called it the stray cat syndrome. If I tell somebody what I've got and they show up and then they guilt me into giving them some of it, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? They're going to want more of it, and they're going to bring their friends. Next thing you know, I'm a Red Cross relief point. If I tell somebody what I've got and then they come over and badger me to get it from me, they are effectively taking the food out of my family's mouth that I worked so hard to collect over time and study and my skills and preparations. And why should I open myself up to that? So don't share all of your secrets. If somebody says, oh my gosh, I've stored up 2 years worth of food, I'm good to go, then you might say, well, you know what? I'm prepared for a hurricane or, you know, tornadoes. I got a few supplies. I'm good to go. Don't feel like you've got to be badgered into sharing all of your details. And like we did talk about earlier with the survival marriage, relationships change. They always do. I mean, I can't imagine too many people went and got married with the intention of getting divorced. So they started out with good intentions, but people change, times change, something bad may happen and things are going to be different. And if you've shared all that information, you've left yourself completely exposed for later on.
Yeah, that is very true. There is still some of that that needs to be kept in place even when you form a group. And I agree with you about the majority of it's probably banking and food are some of your weaponry. Those are things you just kind of want to keep under the radar within your group.
A funny story is we were having group meetings one time, and it was early on in forming a group, and a couple of the more outspoken members of the group, you know, that were – they were big into it, and they said, listen, here's what we want to do. We want to make sure that all of you guys can carry your own weight if we need to activate as a survival group. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make it a program where we come around to see what everybody has to make sure that you're telling the truth about, you know, your food, your, you know, your weaponry, or whatever you've got. And I thought that would be wholly inappropriate. So, I mean, why would I want to open up my pantry to everybody to know what I've got? If we were to activate, I'm going to show up with my stuff. If I don't show up with my stuff and I don't have a very good reason for it, I don't expect you to let me in. So there are ways to work around that. We talk about that in the diverse group, the ways to allot supplies to the group situation and to the retreats, if you have one.
That's a really good idea. Now, if you wouldn't mind, can you share with the listeners what top three mistakes you find that most people assume when they're trying to involve or maybe to not involve other people?
Let's see. Well, top three mistakes that people might assume. I would say first thing that comes to mind is that the other person or the other people that you're talking to have the same maybe interests or skills and supplies that you have. We look at, because, you know, as you said, it's an industry, because of our involvement in this industry or lifestyle, we have a tendency to measure others by what we think and what we have. And if you put those blinders on and you expect that other people are going to do the same things, they might have a different scenario. They might think that a different thing is going to happen. They may have different skills, and you might be a little judgmental because they don't know how to purify water or they don't know how to set up a tent. And I think that really works against you when you close your mind like that. And they may not have all the supplies yet. So I think you've got to don't make assumptions when it comes to other people. Just build that relationship. I'd also say what else comes to mind is that they're going to fall in line and maybe see your way of thinking. It goes along similar to the first thing. Just because you have a certain outlook on something doesn't mean that it's right or it's going to happen. Your camouflage crystal ball is not necessarily going to be accurate. So maybe they're going to, they see things different from you. They have a different experience. If you put me as an Army guy in the same room with an Air Force guy, a Marine, and, you know, a Navy SEAL, we all know how to shoot at people, right? But we know four different ways to do it. So you, what you'll need to do is come off your high horse, maybe, and be open to other ways to get the same thing done. And that's one of your, that's a personal blind spot. We actually talk about gaps and blind spots when it comes to decision making and fatal flaws. That's a blind spot that you have, is failure to accept someone else's view of something. The other thing that comes to mind, maybe I would say, is that other people are going to do what they say they're going to do. you trust them to actually do what they said that they were going to do. I would say that something comes to mind is during the Zimmerman trial in Sanford, which is a couple hours north of us, there was a group that was going to evacuate or activate themselves to their retreat. And they said, we expect civil unrest throughout Central Florida, so we're going to go to the retreat. Well, one of the members said, hey, I don't think it's going to be that bad. I'm not going. And the rest of the group got really angry about it. They're like, hold on, you're part of our group. You've got to go. You said you'd go. Well, I did say I'm going to go, but I also have bills to pay. I've got a job. They're not going to let me, you know, leave because I think something is going to go wrong. So you've got to understand that people have a different perspective on things. They have responsibilities. And this whole self-reliance preparing thing is more of a secondary lifestyle that enhances our primary lifestyle. It can't be the first thing that we do because you'll go crazy. You talk about going down the rabbit hole.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I would say they're not going to leave their family behind like they say they are. Anybody that comes up and says, you know what, I'm leaving family behind. They don't listen to me. They never prepare. They're going to, in many cases, show up with that family, and that family is not ready to go. So you're going to have to expect that they're going to show up and that there's going to be trouble with that.
Very good point. That's a very good point. It's funny, in a scenario, not a real life situation, but it's something in their mind, they may think they can do one thing, but when faced with something in reality, there are other things that take over and you make different choices.
Well, you have to make different choices a lot of times because, like I said, right now we're sitting in an air-conditioned room, we're having a nice conversation, mm-hmm. you know, but when things are really bad, and you're under duress, you've got a very stressful situation, you may have a lot of psychological effects happening on various members of the family, you're going to make different decisions. You're going to attend to your individual hierarchy of needs and those immediately around you. You know that you are better off joining the group if it's a real survival situation, but your interpretation of that situation may be completely different than theirs.
That's true. Very true. Well, now you've got a lot of great information in the book, so I have to ask, because I always have to ask, what was your favorite chapter or topic to write on and why, and what was your biggest struggle to write on and why?
Good question. My favorite chapter. I'm really proud of everything that I managed to get written, and if I were to say the favorite chapter, it's probably one of the more important ones. Would be roles and responsibilities. Because if you don't know what your role is, and even as parents, when we've heard that thing, just play your role in life, I would say that roles and responsibilities was a bit of a discovery for me, as well as was the, you know, the introspective thing. When you start asking yourself these real questions, you have to understand from a writing perspective, I had to ask myself some really hard questions. And I don't think I had actually asked myself those in the first place. So it was more of a discovery process, and it kind of dug into a deeper area of psyche that I didn't expect to, you know, to unearth. But I would say once I did that, I got into roles and responsibilities because I'm so passionate about it. You've got to know what your role is and what your responsibility is. And if you don't know it and somebody else can't tell you what they need, you know, by way of your responsibility, then nothing's going to get done. It's going to be a waste of time, materials. It's going to be frustrating. But it was a bit of a toss-up, I guess, in thinking about the chapters. New membership is probably the other one, because those people, you're trying to really – I had to find a way to communicate a vetting process and not make it too clinical, because I wanted to find a way to communicate to people, listen, these are people that you're talking to that you're going to invite into your life in what could be the worst days of your life. And you've got to be very careful about who you're doing that with. And you're going to be working with a very limited audience anyway, because it's so hard to find others who are even open to the idea of being prepared for anything. There's only like 3% of us in the whole country.
So,
so once you do find someone, you've got to look outside of, you know, what it is you're hoping for and look at what you're actually in front of. And that was a bit of a challenge for me.
Yeah.
And I would say that, you know, what chapters did I struggle with is probably those two.
The ones that were your favorite. Well, the struggle makes them your favorite. That's probably part of it, because it produces something on the end that you can feel very accomplished by. Because as I've looked through those chapters as well, it's funny because we, in our household, my husband has a tendency to say, wait, what's his name? I mean, quote him correctly, because he's got such good ones sometimes. We only grow when we're uncomfortable. So growing only comes out of being out of your comfort zone. And then the other one is you actually operate the best when you operate within the things you're gifted. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there, because you want to grow, but you're not really gifted in an area, so you have to stretch yourself. But you are gifted in certain areas, and that's where people can lean on you the most, because you happen to be, it's kind of like your book puts it, in that role. That's your setting. That's where you offer the most to the group.
It's true, and you know, you kind of hit on something, and I'm trying to figure out how to word it just as you were sorting it out. By being more prepared, by being more situationally aware in everything that's going on around us, we become more confident. So it takes us out of our comfort zone to think about what could go wrong as we war game, maybe mentally some scenarios that may happen. But by doing that, we become more confident because we've thought about it ahead of time. I mean, survival is honestly on the job training, you know, when it comes to a true situation. And you just don't want to go into it cold, because frankly, survival could be a zero sum game. I mean, if you make a wrong decision, it could have some pretty bad effects.
Right.
So by thinking about it ahead of time, you give yourself some peace of mind. You give yourself some confidence. And when you become more confident as a person, the rest of the people in your family will then start to look to you. The rest of your group will look to you. Your community group or wherever you are going to look to you for maybe some ideas. Now, that could work two different ways. There's a bit of a paradox to that. If you become so confident and so ready, those around you might say, look, oh, he's got that. I don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
So that could be a problem that you're going to need to address, you know, because you think everybody's as confident as you are, but they're like, oh, no, I thought you had this.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That it's kind of a burden to bear, but you want to rise to that occasion if you feel like you're supposed to head up a group or even just encourage other people to prepare. It kind of puts you in front of them for them to either follow or unfortunately rely on. And they may not need to do that too much.
Well, and that could be our role. I mean, one of us may be more of a leader, one of us may be more of a follower. It's not incorrect to say that we have followers. Some people just are followers, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know. But if they follow and they participate and play their role and do the responsibilities that, you know, that is needed of them, then they are just as much of a leader to somebody else by setting an example, by participating. So.
Oh, that's exactly true. That's a wonderful way to look at that, because there is a lot of people feel like, well, I can't do this because I'm not a leader, or I don't know enough, or I'm not an expert. Well, you still can play a very vital role in a survival group that without it, there's a gap. There's a hole missing.
Yeah, we do talk about the gaps and the blind spots, like I touched on earlier. A gap really is, imagine a string of dominoes that are ready to fall. And when the dominoes start to fall, and whatever the sequence of actions is that needs to happen, if there's a domino missing, the dominoes fall to a point and none of the other dominoes fall. So whatever the task or responsibility is that needed to happen didn't happen because there was a gap in the plan. That gap could be a skill. It could be a piece of equipment. It could be an updated thought on the situation. So those are things that we talk about and to help you reflect and understand how to make, you know, remove those fatal flaws in decision making, remove those blind spots in yourself. And we actually talk about physical blind spots too, but there's three different types of blind spots and we address all of them.
Oh, that's great. That's really good. Now, I know we're about running out of time. We probably could keep talking. for a long time. But eventually the people listening would go, wow, this is the longest show on the planet, and they'd turn us off. So we'll have to have you come back and talk about some more things with the book and with, you know, setting up your own survival group. Hear some personal stories about some things that have gone on with yours. So hopefully I can get you to do that again before too long.
Happy to. Got a lot of stories.
Awesome. I love to hear the stories of real life things that are playing out, because it's where you get to learn some of the best stuff. Is there anything that you would like to leave the listeners of your preparation station before we sign off?
Well, I would say that make some friends, make some relationships with some other people. Be very careful in what you do, like we've talked about. And you can find us at, you know, readygoprep.com and on Facebook at readygoprep. And if you have a question or something, shoot me an email at info@readygoprep.com. If you've got some kind of question that I can help you with, I'm happy to do it. We travel, we consult. Come out and see us at one of the big shows. We got several shows that we're scheduled to be at in the coming months throughout the end of the year. And come up and introduce yourself. Say hi. I'd love to meet everybody. And I want to hear, if you've got a group that has a question or a problem or something that works really well and you would like to share it, you know, shoot me a message and I'll sit on the phone with you and we'll talk about it for a few minutes, or just tell me what you think, because we're always trying to improve and we can do that through diversity. I embrace the diversity because so many people have a different way of seeing things, and that creates innovation. And once we do that, then we can really be resilient as a group, stronger as a family. And hopefully we can make our communities better.
Awesome. Most definitely. I agree with you. Thank you so much, Charlie, for coming on and sharing the insights that have gone behind this wonderful book. All the links that Charlie mentioned are located below in the show notes, as well as where you can go pick up your copy, especially if you're considering starting a group or, on the other hand, looking to join one. Kind of gives you some ideas of what to look for a top-notch survival group. Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate you being on.
Thank you, Donna. Had a great time.
It's been my pleasure. This has been another episode of Your Preparation Station. For now, this is Donna Miller, and I'm going to sign off, and I hope that you will stop by, pick up one of Charlie's books, contact him, just kind of pick his brain a little bit more, and I think he's hit some great spots with taking care of the relationships that we build, because those are some things that are going to last in the future regardless of what falls apart around us. Until next time, God bless, and we'll talk again really soon. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Your Preparation Station with Donna Miller. We would love to hear from you. Please connect with us at yourpreparationstation.com and on Facebook. Tune in again next time for another encouraging episode. Until then, keep growing and finding joy in the journey.